This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me should be Lionel McCourt. Makoka Klela, but I think he's running late. We'll introduce him as soon as he walks in. Today's show is for motorists that face on a daily basis beggars on every corner, trolley waste collectors, a complete danger on the road, and aggravating window washers. Some South Africans have just... Yeah, many of us South Africans have reached breaking point, but the biggest problems facing us are not the irritating jugglers at traffic lights, but the horrific crime at intersections. This has become such a problem that more often than not, you sit in your car at a traffic light and hope.
I hope nobody do it smash and grab. Said I hope nobody do it smash and grab.
I do a smash and grab. Do that smash and grab. I do diggy do diggy do that smash and grab. First I smash it up, then I snatch it up. That's how I do diggy do diggy do that smash and grab.
Yeah. We laugh at these kind of things, but there's a lot of scary stuff out there, and we need some answers. We need the law to help us, if it can, against smash and grabbers. We'll talk about that in more detail. One of the other challenges facing us at intersections is the aggravating window washer. As I think we all know, they are every motorist's arch enemy. Some have been arrested, but the next day they simply return and continue as before. And this is why they keep doing it.
Now I go window cleaning to earn an honest bob. For a nosy parker, it's an interesting job. Now it's a job that just suits me. A window cleaner you would be if you can see what I can see. When I'm cleaning windows, she pulls her hair all down behind. Then pulls down her never mind. And after that pulls down the blind. When I'm cleaning windows.
Yeah, that's our window cleaning song. It's been reported that when motorists don't agree to their windows being washed, the window washers break their windscreen wipers or leave soap halfway on the car and just walk away. It's a problem. It's a serious problem. Has this happened to you? I'm sure it has. Sadly, some of our people are so desperate and destitute that they'll do just about anything for your loose change. Where are we going wrong in this country? How do our ruling politicians feel when they see a beggar on every corner, or do they just simply turn away and make like they never saw it? So many people are interested to hear the inside story of what it takes to survive on the streets. So in studio today, we are delighted to welcome special guest Michelle Ackerman, who knows what it's like to stand on the streets desperately looking for a handout. Welcome to you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our other guests today know a whole lot about our street people. First up, and he's at a council meeting right now, he'll be joining us a little later, Johannesburg City Councillor Martin Williams. Also joining us is a man with a wicked sense of humor, really wicked. He's a writer and author. His name is Dave Gemmell. Welcome to you, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah, Dave just completed a wonderful series for the Saturday Star, was it, Dave?
Yep.
Yeah, he traveled the length and breadth of Johannesburg and environs to interview and write about some remarkable street people. We're going to talk to you in detail about that. Thanks for being here, Dave. We appreciate
sure.
you. Our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Have a look, and as Lionel always says, give us a like. Our Twitter handle, at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. We also, in collaboration with Legal Talk South Africa, with its Facebook membership of close to 196,000. And our shows get pinned onto their page. Marvelous. Michelle Ackerman.
Yes.
You nervous? You all right?
I'm fine.
Yeah. So, Michelle, you're 43 years old and you stand on the street hoping for a handout for hours at a stretch. I think you spend the whole day there. I've seen you. Thousands of motorists have seen you. You're at the intersection of Jan Smuts Avenue and Conrad Drive.
Yes.
Yeah. In Johannesburg.
That's correct.
By all accounts, your childhood was a disaster. By age 11, you'd been to 16 different schools.
Correct.
Your mother was an alcoholic and sold herself and her body for money.
Correct.
She beat you viciously and you ran away to an orphanage to ask them to take you in.
I ended up doing that, yeah. I couldn't take it anymore, so it was tough. It wasn't once a day, twice a day. It was the whole day, ongoing.
How absolutely terrible for a little girl to have endured all that. You're now married.
Married. Yeah, you know, two girls of my own. Look, I definitely had God with me all the years because being that age, it never bothered me while growing up. I thought it was normal, just that's life. Until now recently when I realized it, I had a hectic childhood. I don't know how I managed to come through so much trauma every day as a little girl. So I definitely had God with me.
For our listeners who will see your picture when we put the podcast up, you're a lovely young-looking woman, and one wouldn't expect you to be standing on a street corner every day looking for money. How do you deal with the abuse that you get, or the rejection, or the scorn that you get from motorists? How do you deal with that every day?
It's just something I must accept. Look. Everybody has their own point, way of looking at things. I can't blame them. They don't know our situation. They don't know what we're going through. Same, I don't know what they're going through. And if they don't want to help, they don't have to help. They don't owe us anything. We're just asking if anybody is willing to help, we will appreciate it. I don't stand there and beg. I knit. I try and do things to give back. I don't want money for nothing. But there are people who do help out of their own, and we are very grateful. And those that don't want to be involved, get involved, that's fine. It's understandable.
Has it become tougher, Michelle, in the last year or so to get money from motorists?
No. Well,
things have kind of tightened in South Africa. People
yes,
have got less
it is
money.
Tougher. You stand there longer hours. Yes, there's definitely less money, but in general, the people are nice.
Does anyone ever roll their window down and say, go and get a job?
That's happened many of times. Normally, when you walk towards a car, they normally roll the window up and just sit there and ignore you, which is also fine.
Have you thought of getting another job?
Of course, but I've got my knitting. I've been so serious with this. I've got a business plan. I've been trying to work on it for about 2 years now. I want to teach knitting. It's called Sybil's Knitting Academy. Mm-hmm. Why Sybil? Because my family gave me the nickname Sybil.
So you actually stand on the corner.
Conrad and Jan Smuts.
You have two knitting needles and wool. Lots and you of knit all day.
I knit all day.
How many hours do you stand there and knit?
I only stand there for about 2 or 3 hours in the mornings. And then I go home and then I knit at home, and my husband and I walk around. We pick up cans, junk, scrap to sell as well for extra money.
What does your husband do?
He used to caretaker at where we were staying previously, but he lost that. We lost our place to stay. We've now in a new little flatlet. We've been there this month only. So a lot of changes in our life as well.
Do you manage to pay your rent and feed
we
your children?
We don't know yet what's going to happen. It's the first month where our rent is actually a big jump. It's much higher than it used to be. So we're not sure yet how. We've got to get used to this. It's a different... Things have changed. You know, we've got to get used to raising more money.
Are there only white people that tip you as a white person?
No.
Is it across the board?
Yeah. All nations.
There's everybody gives you some money?
Not everybody.
No, I mean, across all races?
Yes.
Races, yes.
It's like in every race, there's your people that are givers and then the people that can't give. It's all the same. It doesn't matter what color you are.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah. Everybody's got their... Everybody's the same, actually, in a way. They've all got their own problems.
If you were... If we could reverse the roles and make you the motorist,
mm-hmm.
and there's a beggar on every corner, how would you deal with this?
On every corner?
On every corner. Mm-mm, in Johannesburg, there's one on every corner.
Wow, it's difficult.
How would you as a motorist deal with it?
Well, obviously, I can't give to everybody. You can't. I'm sure you can't. You can't afford it.
There's a wonderful saying. I may have come up with it. They say beggars can't be choosers, but you can choose your own beggar.
Of course.
Do you think that if every motorist chose one beggar
mm-hmm.
and confined themselves to him
mm-hmm.
or her,
mm-hmm.
it could work? Then you just give that person and you ignore everyone else.
Well, you know what? Every beggar, I don't care who they are, have got their own people that help.
Are yours regulars?
Yes. Everybody I've seen, I've heard from other beggars, they've all got their regulars. So the motorist behind doesn't have to feel bad if they're not giving to somebody, because that person standing there has got their regulars.
I think what really aggravates motorists is that a number of beggars actually come up to your window and they harass you.
Oh, and me as a beggar, well, I don't
call
entirely
yourself a
beg,
no.
Because I used, when I started off, I did stand with a cup and a board. And
what did the board say?
Help, please help, in the beginning. Mm. And then I started selling pens and key rings and things, but that didn't work really because I used to give more away in the end. Then a few people threw knitting needles and wool out to me. And I didn't know much about knitting then. And then the third time I got woolen needles, I actually started knitting. I only knew how to knit plain stitch. I couldn't cast off properly and I could cast on. But I made scarves and I sold them.
Mm.
And eventually an amazing woman stopped by.
What's her name?
Lauren.
Do you know her surname?
I don't want to mention that.
Okay.
She'll know who she is. Taught me basically everything I know today.
Are you tearful?
When it's emotional, maybe.
No.
When I think of her, yes. She helped me. She's amazing. She helped me so much. Everything I can do today, she taught me. And that's why I give back when I can.
So do you knit for people and get paid for it?
I do. When they want me to knit something, I do. I charge them.
Do your children know you stand and beg on a street corner?
Not exactly, no, not entirely.
What do you tell them when you leave in the morning?
I'm going to work, I knit. Look, it's different than it was a few years ago. I've been there for many years, maybe 5, 6 years. It's different now because I'm actually doing something and it feels better. I'm not standing there with a cup wanting. And even when I was standing there with a cup, I wouldn't ask. I would, if somebody wants to help, they'll help.
Mm.
I talk to how many people every day. I don't expect them to give me just because I'm talking to them.
Do people roll their windows down and for a chat?
Yes, and I love it.
What do they say to you?
Things in general, everyday living. I mean, I've got some people that actually come to me if they're depressed and they tell me about their problems and I listen.
Do you charge them?
Well, no.
A therapist fee.
You know what's amazing? Just the fact that they actually trust in me and they can talk to me and they don't look down on me. That's priceless.
How's your self-esteem? How do you feel about yourself?
I'm feeling great about myself because I found God in my life and he's been amazing. And I feel great. Things will get better.
How?
They have to. I'm leaving my life in God's hands and... I know if I work hard at what I'm doing, it will get better. It will have to get better. It can't get worse.
This wonderful man, Dave Gemmell.
He has done amazing things.
I think he found you, if I may use that term.
Yes.
And he wrote this article about you, full page in the Saturday Star.
Mm-hmm.
That got you enormous traction, didn't it?
A lot of people didn't know my situation. And I don't talk to them about my problems and that. You know, even if we're chatting every day, I just feel they've got their own problems to deal with. They don't still want to listen to mine. So since David actually put my story out, a lot of people know my story now and they understand better.
Your mother committed suicide?
Yes, she did. She's been trying to do that since I was a little girl. I would come home from school and she'd be lying there with her wrist slashed. She'd be in hospital and wake up and drag, like rip the drips out of her arms and swear at the doctors because they saved her life. She's been trying to kill herself since I can remember. And one day she did.
Mm. How did you feel when you heard it or saw it?
I was sad, obviously, because, I mean, but she phoned me before she did it. And she sounded a bit like she was on the alcohol, so I wasn't sure if she was serious or what. But I could hear she was, I don't know.
Michelle, different. Are you giving your children every chance?
Of course, because I've actually given them up to the family to help me. They're homeschooling at the moment, so it's a better opportunity for them. I can't be selfish because we've moved again, and I mean, it's not fair on
what
them.
Do you mean?
I know what it's like to move around and never be have a proper home with a TV and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, it's been difficult, and yes, I am giving them an opportunity.
What age are they? Did you tell me?
Yes, age 9 and 7.
Mm. So they're with foster parents right now?
No, with their granny.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're going to maybe succeed where you haven't, but it's thanks to you, isn't it? What's the best thing that could happen to you, Michelle?
To me?
Yes.
Oh, I just want to get my business on the go. I've got so many plans. Sybil's Closet is one, and Sybil's Knitting Academy is the other half. The first half, Sybil's Closet, I've got so many plans. I've got, you know, I've been rescuing animals for a long time, my husband and I. And all these animals are so unique. Because we spend a lot of time with them. And it's as if they know what we've done for them. They appreciate it. But, you know, you get animals are just like humans. They come in different characters. Some are shy. Some are babbly mouths. They don't stop talking. Others are outgoing. Others are shy. You know, they just want to be at home and lazy. And so I want to knit identicals to all the animals we've rescued. And I want to call it Sybil's Adopt a Pet.
I could talk to you for hours. I find you absolutely fascinating. And I'm sure our listeners do as well. There's so many questions that I need to ask you, but I may be forced to move on because Dave has also got stories for us. Just one last. Could you get a job at SPCA or any animal shelters or something like that? And would you take it if you got it? I don't want to ask you what you earn on the street, but maybe you're doing particularly well.
No, we live day by day. No, I wouldn't. Look, my dream, obviously I'll take a job, obviously.
Well, I don't know if it's obvious.
I would, because then it's a set income. But I have this dream, and I'm getting older. I'm not getting any younger. I really want to help the rescued animals out there, and I want to help people learn a skill, knit. There's lots more, you know, they can learn. And I want to make these amazing clothes for children, and I want to – well, Sybil's Knitting Academy, it's the basic skills course, then the advanced course, then the master's course, and then obviously a hobby class. And the hobby class will knit for charity, for the homeless, for the abandoned babies, abused pets.
Yeah, there's all kinds of projects. There's the – Warm the World.
No, that's my dream.
Yeah, that's headed up by Judge Cherise Wienor. She's very much part of that. I think Doe Steyn's wife creates blankets for the prisons.
There could never be too many.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of someone who's keeps an eye on you and as far as he can, because he's a very busy man, is a wonderful writer and journalist. He's a remarkable man. His name is Dave Gemmell. And, Dave, you wrote a series for the Saturday Star over a period of what, a year or so?
Yeah, a year and a bit, yeah.
On street people?
Yeah, it just started off, I interviewed one of them at the Juggler, and then, you know, there's so many of them, and you can just sort of put them in groups, you know, there's the the limpers, there's the salesmen, there the beggars, the entertainers, and I just thought, you know, to try and interview one from every sort of group as I went along. That was the sort of plan. It derailed along the way.
Your first interview, I think, was with the jugglers, wasn't it?
That's right.
How did that come about? What made you write about that, and what gave you the inspiration?
Well, you obviously know, that's why you're asking, but I tried to run him over. I was parked outside Republic and Nickel Highway, and he juggled, and he was absolutely fantastic, and I was looking for some money for him, and then I noticed he parked himself in front of my car, and he had his hands on his hips, and he was just glaring at me, and I thought, this is not how it should work. You know, if you really would like something from me, you know, try a little bit harder. Mm. Don't stand in front of me and try and force me to drive around you. So what I did instead was try and run him over. And and he chucked signs at me and swore at me and whatever. And as I was driving off, my first thought was, I'll get you next time. But then on reflection, I thought, you know, that's not right. I mean, I've got everything in the world compared to him. Maybe more interesting would be to find out why he does that, why he's so angry, why he sort of fights for the very people he's looking for succor from. So I went back and interviewed him. He was the basis of the beginning of this whole sort of idea to start interviewing these people, and it sort of grew from there.
Mm. Whose phone is not off? Dave, how many people did you interview? How many street
people? I think in the
people?
End it came to somewhere around 50-odd, yeah. But it wasn't only street people. I interviewed you know, people associated with industry like recyclers and other, you know, the other side of it, and also some of the people who were do-gooders, or as I call them, guardian angels. You know, echoing what Michelle said, that a lot of these people, call them beggars, street people, whatever you want to, have guardian angels who look after them. And I think your idea is if everybody adopted one of these people, you know, it would just make their lives a lot easier. It'd also be a nice way of giving back to society in a way. The problem being is that it might encourage more of them to come out. So, I don't really know what the answer is.
There's one question that I forgot to ask, Michelle, if I can just go back to you quickly. You get that same spot every day of your life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the same spot? How is it that someone else hasn't said, hey, I like that corner as well?
Look, there's respect amongst the street people. Once you stand at one corner, it's actually, unless you don't pitch up there for a while, they won't stand there because they know it's your spot.
Okay.
It's just respect.
The way it is.
Yeah.
One of the issues, especially down in that area, is smash and grabbers. Do you see it happening?
Not yet. I haven't seen it. And yeah. Even though I'm a woman, I won't allow them to do anything to the people there at that intersection.
Dave, you know all about these smash and grabbers. It's happening prolifically all over the place.
I've heard about it more and more. I did at one stage try and track some down to interview them, but as you can imagine, they weren't available to be publicised. It is a problem, but I mean, I suppose it just goes with the position these people find themselves in. They get desperate.
Mm. One of the questions that I often get asked is, what kind of force can be used if one of them is about or is smashing your window and about to take your purse, your bag, your briefcase, your computer case out of your car? Can you shoot them? And the answer is no, you cannot. You cannot use lethal force to prevent it from happening. Even after it's been grabbed, you can't use lethal force to stop the thief running away. And the law is very strict on this one. Our courts have decided that the right to life trumps, is stronger than the right to your own property. So, even if you shout, stop or I'll shoot, and he's grabbed your briefcase, got your life in it, and you say, stop or I'll shoot, and he doesn't, and he just walks away or runs away, you can't do anything.
I think.
And that's, sorry, Dave, that's what's creating the problem, because the smash and grabbers know this.
But isn't it you're entitled to, you know, to defend yourself, you know, commensurate with the risk? So if a guy is smashing and grabbing and sticking his hand into your vehicle and stealing your stuff, you're perfectly welcome to stab him in his arm or his hand or smash his hand or crush it in the window.
You'll be up for assault.
Sure, but
you'll be up for attempted murder. you'll be up for murder if you shoot him.
I'd happily take my chances and say to the judge, what was his hand doing in my window?
I don't think so, Dave. Unless he brandishes a knife or a weapon, a gun, firearm, then you can. If your life is in danger and you reasonably believe it to be in danger, of course, you can then use lethal force. Otherwise, not. So a man who's breaking into your car to steal your possessions, you got to watch and let it go. And the man behind you, who also sees it happening, has got to watch and let it go as well. It's absolutely ludicrous. But that's the way the law reads at the moment.
The old adage, the law is an ass.
Yeah, I mean, you can only really take serious action and hurt someone if they're about to hurt you to prevent really a serious bodily harm to yourself. Otherwise, I'm afraid there's nothing you can do. And that is why this is become such a scourge.
Funny enough, with all my interviews, and I did them across town and in town, downtown, I've came across very little of the crime aspect. And look, I wasn't looking for it in particular, but I mean, I was interviewing people late at night under bridges in downtown Joburg, and I never once felt in danger. I was never once threatened. Everyone I interviewed, despite their circumstances, I mean, you'd bang on a pile of plastic and cardboard and somebody would crawl out and you'd say hello, and he'd say good evening, and he'd be polite and he'd be nice, and he wouldn't ask for anything. Oh, you've just interviewed me, please give me something. They would say thank you, and I know for sure they didn't have a clue of what I was doing. So the crime is, in over a year of doing these interviews, I came across very little crime. I know it's a problem and it's out there and everything, and you're not likely to walk into it, just like that, because it happens, arbitrarily in different spots at different moments. But I found it was almost one of the sort of lesser problems in terms of how many of these people are out there just trying hard to survive from one day to the next.
It's not them, Dave. We're not talking about the beggars that are breaking your windows and smashing. We're talking about the criminals. Christopher Naku, he's the person that I've chosen to
you, his to guardian angel.
Well, to an extent, I assist him. He's told me, and his office, as we call it, he stands at the corner of Jan Smuts and William Nickel. It's very busy. He says from 5 o'clock onwards, well, that was in winter, when it gets a bit dark, the cars that are backed up, if you leave your window open, you're in big trouble, according to him, because people put their hands in and they grab and they run, or sometimes they smash the window and they grab your cell phone. So, I mean, this is a very, very busy intersection. One's got to be just so careful. Most of our listeners are on podcast here. If we had a phone in, you'd probably find tons of people phoning in, with this kind of problem. There's a gent, or it could be a lady, Robin, on Legal Talk, which is our collaborative partner. He says, simple question, when is it legal to use pepper spray? We have a beggar in our area who's addicted to drugs and constantly threatens myself and my kids in the car. He is super aggressive. There you go. Can you use pepper spray?
I actually wouldn't know.
Yeah.
What's the legal position?
Well, if you reasonably and genuinely believe, I suppose, Dave, that an attack on you and your kids is imminently about to happen, then I guess you can use pepper spray. But just because he's menacing,
you can't.
And you can't. You just can't. You'd love to, because he stands with his face pinned up against your window. There are a lot of them that are on serious drugs. You can see it. The law on begging on the roads, and Michelle, you're going to hear this as well. The councils have all got bylaws that prevent people from begging. It says no person, the Joburg bylaws say, no person may lie, stand, congregate, loiter, walk, or otherwise act in any manner that may obstruct traffic. Is that begging? Is it obstructing traffic? Not really. But, I mean, all these bylaws, if they want to, they could remove beggars off the streets. And do you remember, Dave, in 2010 when we had our World Cup here?
They took off all the...
There wasn't a beggar on the road.
Yeah, that's right.
And everyone said, jeepers, look how clean everything is. All the tourists that arrived from all over the world couldn't believe what a first world country we looked like. Do you know how they did that?
No, that was
They passed. No. I think I remember they passed a special. The municipalities passed a special bylaw in each city, specifically for the World Cup. And they came. These bylaws came into operation about a month before the tournament began, and remained in effect until a month after. Basically, these bylaws were to clean the streets of street traders and homeless people, and authorized officials of the councils were empowered to enforce these provisions. And that's how they cleaned it out. You weren't around in 2010 on the streets, were you, Michelle?
No. Mm. Well, not on my corner.
Where you are, no,
not
no.
on my corner.
Yeah. No. So there you are. I mean, if they wanted to, and a lot of people are begging for that motorist, they say, just take the beggars off the road, please.
Can I just come in here? An interesting thing in New York many years ago, they had the broken window policy.
Yes,
I can't for the life of me remember the people who introduced it now.
I think it was the Italian.
Giuliani. I don't think it was him. But anyway, a small example of how that worked was that the brains behind it was that if you stopped minor crime, the broken window theory comes from the fact that if a building has a broken window and you do nothing about it, within moments all the windows in the building will be broken.
Yes.
People will break them because they see you don't care or whatever. But if you fix the window that's broken as it's broken, no more windows will be broken, or there will be a random one at odd moments.
Mm.
So, and yet what you're doing there is you're just simply fixing a small little item or a broken window. You're not doing a whole big change in society or anything else. And where they extended that to was they stopped fare jumpers on the subway. And when people questioned this, they said, why on earth would you stop fare jumpers when you have the muggers and the rapists and the thieves on the train? That's what you should be stopping.
Mm.
And the logic was that people who are going on the trains to mug and steal and rape are not going to pay the fare. They're just not those sort of people. So they jump the fare. They don't pay it. So they stop the fare jumpers. That's what they focused
on. It's the small things.
And do you know that rape, robbery, and all the other crimes on the train lessened hugely, hugely. It was dramatic. And so in there's a parallel. You talk about these muggers on the, you know, in the traffic and everything else. Rather than shooting them, rather than pepper spraying them or getting yourself in a tizz, what should happen is there's this whole street people situation should be coordinated so that you take away the people who are doing nothing on the street. One thing about Michelle, which I think is honorable, is that she's likes the sense of doing something for a living. She doesn't beg. She doesn't. She knits for a living, and she knits all day, and she takes orders, and she produces a product which people are happy to pay for. So she earns a living, even though she's doing it on the street. But there are a lot of guys who come up to your window and they just brandish a cup at you, or they point at their stomach and they say they need food, and you must give to them. You get rid of all of them.
Yeah.
You watch the crime rate, the smash and grabs and everything else. You watch them diminish. And I think there's something that should be looked at. They should look at a version of the broken window policy to govern this whole situation.
Absolutely. We are very blessed today because someone that just walked into our studio is Martin Williams. But we're going to talk to Martin. Let's just break for a moment because he's about to come into the studio. We'll be right back.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Martin Williams, journalist by profession, was managing editor of Natal Witness, were you? Is it the right bio I've got years ago?
That's going a long way back. I was the editor of The Citizen when I retired in 2013.
Yeah. You're now city councillor Johannesburg for Ward what?
Ward 90.
Give us an idea of what that encompasses, what area.
Well, it starts at Craig Hall Park, Craig Hall, Dunkeld, Dunkeld West, Hurlingham, Hyde Park, Sandhurst, Park Moor. Those are the main suburbs. Yeah.
Okay, so Martin, you have strong opinions on the socio-economic issue of vagrants, it is called. You have another title for people that hang around our parks and are sleeping there and whatever.
Displaced people, yes.
Okay. Displaced people are often what we call these street, these trolley...
Trolley pushing waste pickers.
Yes. Okay. Where are they sleeping?
a lot of them are sleeping in our parks and along the spread.
Okay. Now, where could people, what is the displaced that I've read about or you've spoken about, displaced city, a person's unit that the city of Johannesburg has created? Is there such a thing?
Yes, it's a displaced people's unit. It's DPU. Mm-hmm. It has been functioning for I don't know how many years. It certainly was functioning when I became a councillor in this ward in August 2016.
Yes.
At that time, quite a momentous thing happened in relation to displaced people. I don't remember George Lee Park, which is the corner of Santon Drive and William Nicol. There were upwards of 300 people living in the park. And a process was started before I became a councillor. Other people started the process of refencing the park and moving those people out. And since then, those people have dispersed, as they told us they would, and they're living in parks and along the spate nearby. In this instance, most of them are Lesotho citizens, many without documentation, and there have been all sorts of problems associated with that. Yeah.
If people want a meal and a place to sleep, is there something that the council offers?
Yeah, not in Ward 90 at this stage. The closest one to there would be run by the Immaculata Sisters of Mercy in Rosebank, right next to the Rosebank police station. They accommodate 80 men and 20 women. You can spend the night there and have a hot meal and a shower.
For free.
It costs 8 rand.
For 8 rand.
Yeah. 3 Koch Street is the in town, is the main one for the city. There's an attempt to have one in Randburg at the moment. There's a lot of heat from residents about that. They don't like the idea.
Martin, there's a cry out from our public and from many sources.
Yes.
Don't give to the beggars. Don't give. Because if you give, you create a society of beggars. Cliched, but that's what it is.
Yes.
If we didn't give, where would they go? and are these people going to just, you know, die on the street corners? Dave, where do they go? Yeah.
It's an interesting point. You know, if I was asked the one day, are there these street people in Soweto? So I said, I had no idea. And my friend said, go and have a look. And I went off and I spent a day in Soweto. And there are none or very, very few street people. And I stopped and asked a taxi driver. He was the only person I could find to interview. And asked him why this was. And he just said, you know, we work so hard for our money. We're not going to give people free money. You know, they will buy fruit and vegetables of people who sell stuff and everything else. But beggars, no. And
but he'd give you the same answer in Santon.
But no, but hang on. But he said, look up through the rest of Africa. And I did some research on it. And that you do not see beggars in most other African countries. Because people just don't understand the concept of we can get a job. We work hard for our money. Why should you just stand at the road and we give you what we've been working for? And there are very few beggars. You see very, very few beggars, unless they're disabled, in Africa. And why is that? It's because no one's feeding them to beg. That's what you're doing. You're encouraging them by giving them money. So my point down here, just as a starting point, is don't give anyone who's begging. Give somebody who, like Michelle, is knitting or earning their living by selling you something. Somebody selling you a bunch of evers is at least working for a living. You know, he's doing something and he's providing you with something for in return for your money. But just simply giving people money is just giving them the wrong message right from the start.
Well, what about the blind and the disabled? Look, what happens to them?
They should, you know, obviously it would be an ideal world if their associations and things and charities could look after all of them. But I have less qualms giving either an entertainer or a limper, as I call them, or a blind person money in the sense that there's not much they could do, you know, to improve their situation, without support. But the guys who just stand there and stick a mug at you, or who the great trick of walking along, pointing at their stomach and patting pointing at their mouth, saying they need food and they need money, why on earth should you give it to them?
How do you feel, Martin?
Yeah, I feel it's true that giving in this sense can create a culture of dependency, but not giving is not going to solve the problem, not by a long way. In this country, which is not the rest of Africa, we're talking about we're here in Sandton, Rivonia, whatever. People beg there because there are rich pickings there. And in my case, I'm not talking only about beggars, but about people who are trying to earn a living by recycling waste. They regard it as their job.
There, I don't think we have a problem.
No, yeah. I'm completely agree with that.
Yeah. I think that everyone agrees. I think the only danger with them is the danger they create on the roads.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's opposed to the recyclers.
I've had some quite robust exchanges with members of the Mail Committee about whose responsibility is what and who should be doing what. And I asked the Chief of Police a detailed question, and I've asked it of the MMC. And one of the tail enders in the answer is that they would prefer if residents didn't encourage people by, you know, offering them comfort in places where they shouldn't be. You know, people sleeping in the park, you offer them a blanket or a tent or whatever. So there is that element too. So what Dave is saying is not unfamiliar to any of us. But I'm just saying that, we don't give. That's a tough love approach, but it's not going to work here. Joburg is a magnet. It attracts thousands and thousands of more people every day, and a lot of them are unregistered, might not be from this country.
Yes.
Saying, we're not going to give that. That's going to solve the problem. What you need is an approach that includes Home Affairs, International Relations Corporation, the SAPS, JMPD, people who look after the parks, to deal with them.
A few years ago, I interviewed the trolley people, the waste removers.
Yeah.
And they were all foreign nationals.
Yes.
Swaziland. Someone said Lesotho earlier.
A lot of them are Lesotho. Yeah.
So they congregate. So you'll have Lesotho citizens in my ward. You'll have Zimbabweans in another place. And so that's what they do. Yeah.
I guess these people don't qualify for any form of social grants.
No.
And they, you know, they don't have papers.
Yeah.
They can't get registered and they can't get proper jobs.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yes.
And they're forced to do what they're doing.
Well, they're not forced to, and that's an existential question.
Yes, well, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. From their point of view,
During the big sort of movement out of George Lee, we interviewed a lot of these people, the city social development department interviewed them. They said they didn't want to go to a shelter, most of them. They didn't want to be moved from where they were. If we moved them, they'd go across the road, which they did, or they'd go and live in that space, which they did. And the reason they're there is because there are rich pickings, not just from standing and begging, but from the whole waste collection point of view. They're able to fill their trolleys very nicely in a convenient way. They'd rather sleep rough in the park than be shipped to Cox Street or Rosebank or anywhere.
If they wanted to, they could get a meal and a bed at the places you mentioned earlier. They choose to sleep in the parks and wash in the drains. I mean, I've interviewed them. They choose to do that.
Yes.
So, I mean, you could as a citizen say, well, I'm not going to give you anything if that's what you want to do. That's your decision. The fact is, are these facilities sufficiently able to to take on all the people on the street corners?
There aren't enough shelters in the city to, you know, the city has a housing backlog of more than 300,000 units anyway. And it just keeps multiplying all the time.
Could the city do more?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. From the time I became a councillor, I've been trying to put pressure on the executive to come up with there isn't actually a clear policy on displaced people at the moment. One was drawn up in 2010. For the first time, on July the 31st, I attended a workshop on attempts to update that policy. At that time, they were just worried about a few people sleeping on the pavements. 8 years ago, things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah, I spoke to a security organization called CAP, C-A-P.
Yes.
You see their trucks all over the place.
Yes, they're in my neighborhood too.
Yeah, I think they're yellow, aren't they? Or whatever, their trucks are black.
Yellow and black. A lot of them are yellow and black, yeah.
I think they're very active in the north of Johannesburg and the northeastern suburbs.
Yes.
Yeah. I asked them, I spoke to the CEO, Mark van Jaarsveld, who really wanted to be here today, but he can't for religious reasons. He said that the informal waste collectors are not a crime problem.
I agree with that.
Yeah. He sent me some statement. He said they've collected data over 12 years, and recyclers do not pose a significant threat to the security of communities.
Yeah.
They may be a nuisance. I think we all find them a nuisance, but certainly on the road. I mean, they're treacherous. That, they're absolutely treacherous.
My main concern around that is the environment. I go regularly to these places where the people sleep, and what you do find quite often is little packets that drugs are bought in, and I don't know what drugs are in there, but these tiny little plastic packets. So you see a lot of that, but I don't associate them with crime in any significant sense. But in one of the places near the corner of Sandton Drive and William Nicol, I have encountered 10 rats at one time. I see a little stream blocked up with blankets or any sort of garbage, people chucking stuff in the rivers and stuff. That kind of pollution worries me a lot, that the degradation of the environment. And I could go on and on about that. So occasionally, and I have a language difficulty with Sotho citizens, a lot of education is required. We go there once a month on this Aritzebetseng thing to clean up, and I get people to try and talk to them, explain what's happening. And they say, yes, yes, yes. And you come back 3 weeks later and it's just chaos again.
Martin, before you walked in, we were talking about what happened in the 2010 World Cup when the streets were cleaned of everyone, beggars and street people.
That's when this previous policy was devised.
Yeah. I mean, forgive me, but if we really wanted to clean up, and we have a lady who stands on a street corner. She's with us today.
Yes.
But if we really wanted to rid the streets of a beggar on every corner, we could. The council could pass these bylaws.
No.
Why?
Well, it's an idealistic thing, because one of the questions that I asked the MMC and the chief of police is, why does the city not enforce and uphold these bylaws? And I listed them. And you're not allowed to sleep or wash yourself,
or loiter, or whatever it may be.
In a public open space.
Yes.
And then I've got a lot of reasons why not. And including, lack of cooperation from other agencies. Secondly, it's not an arrestable offence. They can't go and take someone out of a park and stick him in a cell.
How do they clean up when there's a BRICS conference and where there's some really big deal conference happening? The streets, there is not a beggar in sight.
No, I don't think that's true.
I kid you not.
You don't see them.
When they had the BRICS conference in Sandton in the middle of 2018, there wasn't a beggar in sight. I can assure you my office is there in that particular, around there.
Okay.
If you're talking about
high visibility streets, perhaps.
Yes.
But the guys who are living in various places
in the parks,
Sandton Drive, off Sandton Drive and William Nicol, they're still there. They were there all the time. I go there, I know. So
they didn't get rid of those.
They weren't removed, yeah.
Yeah. Dave, you want to comment on anything? Or?
I think the recyclers, because there's so many of them, our suburbs are literally infested by them. They sort of become a sort of a token of the irritation or the all these people on the streets, and yet they're the ones who probably work the hardest. And I mean, we were out feeding them last night, and it was the only meal they get during the week. I mean, I asked some of them, what would you have done if you didn't get a meal tonight? He said, I would have had another bottle of water or something. But I think they aren't really the target, because it goes back to what I'm saying, is that if they're earning a living, what you said earlier was just don't give. I didn't say that. It's don't give to the people who are doing nothing for the money. You encourage them. And you know what will happen to them? They won't simply disappear. They'll start doing something. They'll look around and say, these guys are making wire things, or this one's knitting, or this one's entertaining. And they'll do something at least that's more constructive than just simply giving money to beggars.
Are you saying that the jugglers are less irritating than the man who's just standing next to your car?
They are, because if you look at them, just reframe the whole thing and look at them and say, how good is this guy? You'll be astonished how good they are. You'll struggle to see on international stages people who can juggle like these fellas. I mean, they practice effectively for 8 hours a day, because that's what they do every day. But they are good. If you look at them and just analyze their skills and see and imagine how difficult it is to do what they're doing, at least they're providing something. They're putting effort into life. They're doing something. Whereas the beggars who just point at their stomach, now it's your responsibility to feed them. No. And you know what'll happen? If he points at his stomach often enough and nobody gives him any money, he'll go find something else to do. I don't know what, but he'll find something to do. I promise you he will. He's not going to just lie down and die because no one gave him any money.
Yeah, this is the man who wrote very beautifully about street people for a year in the Saturday Star, Dave Gemmell.
Yeah.
Martin, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that because I was asked to come here to talk about displaced people.
Yes.
Beggars, yeah, you know, the culture of dependency is an issue. Mm. But
when is a person displaced? What is the definition of a? Is it a vagrant? What is a vagrant? Someone in everyday
like
terms.
Homelessness is a worldwide problem. You can go to New York, as I'm sure you have. You'll see people sleeping rough. You see it in London, Paris. Mm. You know, Western capitals and you know, third world, obviously. Right in the last couple of years, this huge exodus of people from across Northern Africa, across the Mediterranean into Europe, that's created a huge...
Absolutely.
Lot of homeless. Mm. In Syria, there's homeless people. Mm. People are on the move all over the place. It's just our variety here is different.
Do we have people sleeping on pavements in Johannesburg?
Thousands.
Yeah, yeah. Thousands. Thousands. Absolutely. Yeah.
On Mandela Day, I went out with a company, a tow company, and they were distributing blankets, and they distributed 3,000 blankets. Now, you think you'd struggle to give that many blankets away.
Yeah.
I promise you, we were avoiding certain areas because there were too many people in that area. We would have been swamped. Mm. And wherever we went, there were people sleeping on the pavements. It was the most depressing thing to see, the simple, overwhelming number of them.
So the city of Joburg is sort of seized with the issue, but I would like to see more energy and emphasis and money going on it. In the year that I became a councillor here, in the budget leading up to that, the budget for the displaced people's unit was halved at the same time they were preparing to deal with George Lee Park. Mm. So there is money set aside in the current budget cycle for shelters. But the placing of them remains an issue. Mm. My sense is that people are more receptive now. People in my world be more receptive than they were 2-3 years ago. They realize that these people aren't going to go away. If we could construct like multi-purpose centers where you could combine a bit of education, some sort of recycling station, and the sleeping would be just, you know, you can stay there at night, but in the daytime you've got to get out. I think we're heading towards that sort of thing in this part of the world, yeah.
I think we'd like to thank Michelle Ackerman very much for coming in. It's not easy to be grilled by us here. Come a little forward, Michelle. Yeah, we can only say God bless you. And
thank you.
I hope you and your children achieve some greatness in your lives. You're working hard towards it. If people want to learn some knitting and support you.
Thank you.
And you knit what do you do? What kind of knitting do you do for people?
I can knit anything. But I was given a sewing machine a few days ago, I'm going to start sewing now as well.
Yeah,
I'm very excited about that.
Okay. Corner Jan Smuts and Conrad Drive in Craighall.
That's
where they can find you. What's the best time to get you?
Cool. Well, it's summer now, so I want to start a bit earlier, so I can get out of the sun a bit earlier. So probably, from early mornings, maybe 7 till about lunchtime.
Mm. Okay, all the best to you, Michelle, and thanks for being so brave. Not easy to come in here.
Thank you.
To Dave Gemmell, who wrote about our street people for over a year in the Saturday Star, you did a great job. Every week you came out with something really interesting. What's next, Dave?
Well, thanks for the chance to plug this. I want to put it all together now in a coffee table book. The intention being to get the book sponsored or whatever, but then use a percentage of the proceeds to give to the people in the book, not just to street people in general. Mm. And the reason I say that is that if you give Michelle 100 rand or 200 rand or 300 rand or something, you help her for a day, you get her going along, but it doesn't advance her cause, which is to start this little sewing academy. And I've had a look at some of her forms and what she's put together, a sort of mini business plan, and it's quite impressive. To give her that sort of opportunity would take a lump sum of, say, 5,000 rand or 10,000 rand, which I think if we could sell enough books and we could get it sponsored, there would be this chance to give a few people like Michelle a lump sum, which would take them out of where they are at the moment.
Great initiative, Dave. Mm. I hope it works for you.
Thank you.
Martin Williams, City Councillor, Johannesburg. Yeah. You rushed to be here. I know you had something really big on this morning. Mm. You still got your lanyard, your tag. Many thanks. Yeah. You're a councillor for how long? How does it work quickly? You've got a minute.
There's a 5-year term, and the election was in August 2016. So
you've still got a long, long spell left.
We're not halfway yet.
Okay, keep up the good work. You do a great job in that area. That's why I got you in. Yeah. Many thanks. I'm sure your constituents, try and get this out to them. They would love to hear what you're doing for the people that need assistance there. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
thanks,
cool.
Gary.
Yeah, many thanks. You want to end off, Michelle?
I just want to say something. I want to thank everybody that passes that intersection, Conrad and Jan Smuts, for over the years, for their patience especially, because I've been there for so long. Thank you for their ongoing support, for understanding and still helping and you know, still just being there for me, even when they just chat to me. It's amazing. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, there's some good angels out there. Some
definitely
good people. Wonderful. Yeah, unfortunately we're not all as good as some, but anyway, that's another discussion. Many thanks to you, our listener. I hope you've enjoyed this one. We'll see you next Tuesday. Cheers till then.
Cheers.
Law like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.